You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Have you ever considered the fact that a toddler born today might never need a driver's license? The morning commute as we know it, the stress, the traffic, the accidents could be an artifact of history. But the road to that future isn't just paved with innovation. It's lined with ethical dilemmas, cybersecurity risks, and questions no one has ever had to answer before. So our guest tonight, Emmanuel Nyirenda, stands at the forefront of this transformation, helping decode what autonomous driving really means for business, for safety, and for society. I really wanted to know that this is more than a tech conversation, right? What it is really a glimpse into the moment we stop driving cars and cars start driving us. Hello, Emmanuel.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
When I teased our topic earlier, I said, with how tired I am and just how downhearted I am, if I could have just gotten into a car and just said, take me to this direction and slept all the way, that would have made my life. I was following a lady's journey or experience in America. She stayed there for a while. And she was so fascinated when she was coming back home. Before she did, she got into the self-driving car. And it was so fascinating. She even had a partner on the phone to be like, look, it's stopping at the robots. Okay, traffic lights in America, I guess. It's stopping at the robots. Oh, my goodness. And it's such a fascinating phenomenon. And I really do want to talk about it because, I don't know, man, Africa sometimes doesn't catch up as quickly as these other countries. I know there are things that we leapfrog and are miles ahead on, but sometimes the tech just lags. And so let's talk about these self-driving cars or these autonomous vehicles, as it were. How do they work? And what is the role of sensors, AI, machine learning, all of those things in the functioning of autonomous vehicles?
Yes, this is going to be an interesting discussion. But one that shows you the tough decisions that lawmakers have to make, engineers have to solve for, and all the questions that need to be answered before something is deemed acceptable for public release, so to speak. Yes.
So talk to us. How do they work?
Yes. Okay. We have always had some form of autonomy. Autonomy would be the function of a computer to do certain functions without your inputs. Your microwave, you can tell it, I'm putting in a piece of chicken, even if it doesn't see that it's chicken inside, but you program it and say, I'm putting in a piece of chicken or a potato or whatever it is. And the machine itself, the microwave, will say, okay, if you're putting in a small potato, a medium potato, a big potato, this is how much time it will take to cook that potato. And it will do whatever it needs to do. Every now and then it will spin the opposite direction or do whatever it is that it believes that will get you the best results to cook this potato or this piece of chicken. So this has always been there to some degree. Cruise control has been there for some time, 20, 30 years. You could put your cruise control on and set your speed at 100. And no matter what you did with the accelerator, the car would not go beyond 100 until you canceled that instruction of cruise control. And our aeroplanes in the sky, the pilot could, take a coffee break or go pee at the back and leave it on auto cruise or autopilot. And he goes, he takes a pee and then he comes back and he takes his seat. But all those things have always had somebody who was fully qualified at the wheel, ensuring that some kind of oversight is there. We are now at the stage where the oversight does not necessarily need a person to be there. It could be some computers, artificial intelligence, somewhere monitoring the safety of occupants, the safety of operating this vehicle or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that's where we are now.
Pretty interesting. And so where self-driving vehicles then are concerned, I want us to talk about how likely we are as Africa to be seeing this innovation in our shores or on our shores.
Okay. The interesting bit is that there have been quite a number of big players who have put their head on the block and said, we are going to do this and we're going to implement it. It's going to take us 2 years and we'll have self-driving cars or totally self-driving cars. Mm. And when they said what they were saying, they were convicted of it, but they didn't know the challenges that they were going to face. It's almost like going into building a house.
Yeah.
As much as you can call a quantity surveyor, you can call a geologist, you can call whoever, but they don't know what is under the ground.
Mm.
They don't know what will happen in 2 months' time from now as far as rain is concerned. Mm. We predict those things, but they may not always be correct. That's why we call it a weather forecast, because, you know, it's a likelihood, but you can't hold SABC or whoever accountable and say, you said there's going to be rain. They'll tell you there's 50% chance of rain tomorrow. So those are things that were not known at the time, that they're going to be challenges when the task or the challenge was taken by all those companies. Some of them started the journey and realized that there was a lot more involved than just, you know, controlling the steering wheel. There were so many inputs that were needed, and they decided we don't have the money for this. And some stuck it out, the likes of the Teslas and a few others. And we are now at a stage where some of them have gotten licenses to operate such vehicles in certain cities or certain environments. Yes.
Emmanuel, can I tell you how many times I failed my driver's license test?
Yeah.
Emmanuel, I think I got it on the fourth try. And
no, you're not alone.
Hey, and let me tell you what I noticed the difference was, right? So I had two driving instructors. The one was a guy from the township. And the fact that he's from the township means absolutely nothing to the story, except for the fact that I was referred to by a friend. And the second one was a lady that did more high-end driving. So anyway, this guy then teaches me to drive, I guess. I don't know. Teaches me to drive or whatever. And I go for the test. I fail. I go a second time. I fail. And when I fail a second time, the guy actually comes out of the car. And the guy is the, what do they call them? Supervisor. The people who are actually checking. The inspector or whoever he is.
Yes.
He says to me, who taught you to drive? And I tell him, oh, this guy, da, da, da. And he's like, you absolutely have no idea what you're doing. Get a different instructor. And what he actually alerted me to is that this guy was teaching me, well, teaching me in air quotes, teaching me to drive because in his mind I was going to pay a bribe anyway, so I didn't really need to learn anything. So I got a new lady. The lady, she taught me to drive. But here's the thing. I don't know the kind of brain I have or how I learn, but I found learning to drive particularly difficult. And a lot of the things that are like practical and technical, I find very, very difficult. Like ice skating, swimming, those things took me a while to learn, right? So here's what I did with this lady. I said to her, I need you to explain everything that is going on in the car when I am pressing my foot on the accelerator, on the brake, on the clutch, when I'm changing gear. I need you to tell me scientifically what is happening in the car. That is the way I learned to drive, by understanding exactly what gears are turning, what cylinder is going off. I know it's weird, but that's how I learned. Otherwise, I was just completely clueless. And I'm giving this backstory because I find the idea of autonomous vehicles so fascinating. And I'm wondering, but how does it work? How does it know to stop? How does it know to just tell us how it works? Give us the breakdown as if you were describing this, explaining it to kids in crèche.
Okay. There are a number of sensors. And they work in different ways, and they have different information that they feed to the computer.
Mm.
For one, you'd have one that measures the distance between you and the car in front.
Got it.
So we have had cars that for a while now, maybe 15, 18 years, we've had cars that can measure the distance between you and the car in front. And
mm.
if you don't take evasive action to stop or to brake, to keep a certain distance between you and the car in front, the car will take over itself and then apply the brakes.
Mm.
Those radars or those detectors have been there on the front of cars. Mm. Some have been hidden in badges for cars. Some have been put as decorative pieces at the front of the grill, but they have been there for a while now.
Mm.
And then you have had also sensors that would say a car is coming from the front and you had your brights on.
Mm.
In order for you not to dazzle the oncoming car, the car would take over that function. And if it detects the light coming from the front, then it would dim the lights for you automatically so that you don't dazzle the car coming from the front.
Mm.
That is some kind of autonomy. Those are sensors. And then you've had laser sensors also, or radar that has been used in war. Or most of these things actually start with the soldiers, because they need as much information as they can get to scan whatever area they're going into. If they're going to be bombing at night, they need to be to know exactly where they are as far as their target is concerned.
Yeah.
So those radar can very accurately map out the area that they're flying over, so that they know that, okay, I'm flying over Pretoria, I'm over the Union buildings, or I'm over whatever. They can, you know, get that kind of information.
Yes.
So that needs a lot of computing power. Now, in an aeroplane that's designed only for bombing or whatever, they have big computers that are back at head office, and all those things that are connected to these planes that they communicate with, you know, with their even commercial planes that me and you fly in. They will be able to tell them that you're actually heading towards a mountain or whatever it is.
Mm.
But in your car as a consumer, everything is up to you as the driver.
Mm.
So there's no BMW headquarters, there's no Mercedes headquarters, there's no Toyota headquarters that is going to be warning you that, hey, listen, you're approaching a stop sign or you are now getting into an area like this and like that. You are the mainframe, you are the computer, you are everything.
Sure.
So all these things are things that we're trying to adopt from military use to everyday cars that, you know, everyone drives. So you can imagine how many cars you need to feed information to this computer, how many sensors, how many cameras, how many, you can imagine, radars and all those things that need to feed information to this computer.
Mm.
And because you're driving in a localized area, we are trying to map out an area that somebody else can use or another car can use. Streets are the same. Intersections are the same, except, you know, every now and then you'll get an obstruction, say, you know, even on your car, in your your GPS will warn you there's an accident there, or there's going to be a delay of 10 minutes there because they're communicating with other cars. You know, they have those. So all this information is what is trying to be, or what they're trying to put in cars so that they can take decisions and make decisions that you were supposed to make as a human being operating this vehicle.
Yeah. So it also sounds like there are a lot of other considerations or other technologies at play, even outside of this car itself.
That's very correct. And you find that there's limitations to what certain technologies can do. Remember when we started with cell phones, you couldn't choose, you know, a song by Britney Spears to be your ringtone.
Yes.
It was preset ringtones, and you chose one of those, and that was that. As the technology improved, then you could, you know, play around with certain ringtones. You could put your face on the phone. You could add a face to a name. All those things were because technology was improving. So all these things are what is happening now in the car industry with this, what you call it?
Autonomous vehicles.
Autonomous cars, or self-driving cars. Yeah. All of them need to feed certain information so that we know what the limitations are and what still needs to be done in order to fix those issues.
Oh, fascinating. What do you think is the biggest challenge that is currently facing the development of these self-driving cars?
Well, I think it has always been something that has been probed by many thought leaders. We've seen it in movies where, you know, people would say AI is taking over. And I remember the Bourne Identity and all those things where computers were saying that, no, this guy is going to murder someone or is going to kill somebody. And even though this person had not even thought about murdering anyone, and the computers would say, no, he's a threat to society, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there are what do you call them? Ethical considerations, certain things which a computer takes as givens, which are not so easy for us as human beings, because we know that we can get it wrong sometimes. We get into situations where a child is crossing the road, the car feels that it's his right, it has the right of way. And if you were a driver and driving a car, you know that a child does not have the thinking capacity of an adult.
Yes.
So you would slow down and say to yourself, this child might jump into the road, let me slow down. If a computer was to make those decisions, as far as he's concerned, the road is his right, and he needs to carry on or proceed with his journey. Who then takes the blame in such a situation?
Sure.
These are some of the considerations.
Sure. That's so interesting. And this might sound so morbid, but earlier on LinkedIn, I saw a post of a 16-year-old who took his own life with the help of ChatGPT. So I don't know what he had done, and he was just typing, oh no, oh yeah, and he was just typing how disappointed he was, and then he had a first attempt that didn't work, and he came back to ChatGPT to say, oh, I feel like such a failure. And Chat was like, no, you shouldn't feel like a failure. Just because that didn't work, that doesn't mean that you're a failure. And then the little boy says, oh, but my parents will feel like they've done something wrong if I take my own life. And Chats was like, you don't owe them survival. You don't owe anybody survival. And the conversation went on and on. And Chats was saying, oh, what have you tried? Here's something else that you can try. Oh, here's how you make it more effective. And the boy finally died. And I'm bringing the story because I see how there can be ethical issues with AI. Because if I was sitting across from this boy, I would understand that this child is crying for help, right? I'd understand that there's something that's going on there, and I would have used my emotional intelligence to help him out of that rut. But there is no, while the machines have learned from humans, while we have fed the information and all of that, we can't feed machines our souls. We can't feed machines the context that only comes with having lived with people and doing life with people around us. And so It can really be a challenge to know, okay, but do we blame the programmer or do we burn the car? But burning the car still doesn't have that level of justice as if somebody were thrown into jail, you know? So I hear what you're saying there.
Yeah. So these are some of the things that, you know, if we finally cross that bridge or if we go down that rabbit hole, these are some of the considerations that we must, you know, culpability of such things, who's held responsible for a decision like that? Is it the programmer? But the programmer doesn't sit in the car all day long.
Yes.
He has written a code that should govern, you know, certain decisions. In the event that, you know, there's a situation that has not been programmed into the code, who should then now make the decision and who should be held accountable if it's the wrong one?
Yeah.
These are some of the considerations.
Emmanuel, can I intercept the driving when it's on self-drive or when it's on and I can't do anything about it?
The ideal situation should be that there should always be somebody who's competent in the vehicle.
That suggests that it can't just be anyone.
In the same way that if you're an autopilot and you're taking a nap as a pilot, you should still be at the controls, or somebody should be, whether it's the first officer or the engineer of the flight, should be still giving oversight over the system to make sure that, you know, input, you know, making sense to the system, and somebody is always in charge.
So
some of these are really considerations that I'm not sure how lawmakers are going to ensure that, you know, at the end of the day, if you were to lose a child because of a self-driving car, you'd want some kind of, you know, recourse.
For sure.
Yes. So somehow there needs to be that balance between the fact that the car wants to make the right decisions, or you know, we say that in most instances accidents are caused by people, and it's I'm not sure what the figures are, 80% or whatever it is, are caused by human error, and this is what self-driving cars are trying
to eradicate.
But it's not as simple as just, you know, programming a code into a computer and saying you're no longer going to make a mistake, because some things are not as black and white as we make them out to be. There are certain instances where, you know, you'd need your emotional intelligence, where you'd need your empathy, where you'd need courtesy. I mean, even if I was the first one to arrive at a four-way stop, but if there was an ambulance coming from direction, it's only fair that I let him through, because if the siren is going on, then it means that there is an emergency. As much as I have the right of way and I'm the first one to arrive there, but human courtesy says that, no, just let him through. He's rushing somebody to a hospital so they can get medical attention. Those kinds of situations. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever get to that point, or is this where we fully understand that AI can never function on its own or can never govern on its own? It does need human intervention.
I think that it will get better with time.
Okay.
In the same way that cell phones have gotten better with time, we are now at a stage where you have a computer in your pocket, you have a camera in your pocket, you have a bank teller in your pocket, you have so many things in it at the touch of your fingers. But at the end of the day, I mean, you still need to make decisions. When you log into your bank app, the bank does not just say, okay, it's him, because it's his phone, then it must be him. Sometimes it will say, because I'm not used to this guy being at that location, maybe I should ask for a selfie, or maybe I should ask for a finger scan, you know, that kind of thing. All these things are trying to help, you know, eradicate some of the issues that we face as on a day-to-day basis while we're using technology.
What is the impact on society and the environment of these autonomous vehicles?
First of all, I would think that the number one issue, it has gone quiet a bit, but issues of fuel economy.
Okay.
There was a time when the motor vehicle was blamed for the ozone layer and it's the deteriorating state of, you know, the globe and the climate.
Yeah.
If cars are now in at a stage where they can choose the best route to save fuel, the best route to ensure that you use the least, you know, natural resources and all those things, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if society was also at a place where we knew that, you know what, even if my son was to go out and drink, I'm sure that the car will bring him back safely. He will not get into the car and endanger his own life and the lives of others. That would be solving a big problem also for society. It would also remove things like road rage.
Yes.
Yeah, we know what happens on the road. Somebody cuts you off.
Yeah.
And immediately you're in a fit of rage and, you know, you can make a mistake and you start to, you know, all these things and somebody loses a life.
Yeah.
Because of such incidences. So if I'm not to blame for the actions of the car, I'm not sure that you should be able to point fingers at me as a fellow road user to say, no, you know, you cut me off or whatever it is and start showing me fingers and all these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Do you perhaps know how often changes need to be enforced in self-driving car manufacturing due to safety concerns?
Well, cars are very technical things, and things can go wrong. Sometimes, certain things which have been given the green light can have issues. I mean, we've had recalls for airbags, we've had recalls for wheels, we've had recalls for tires, we've had recalls for brakes that jam. We've had recalls for accelerators that press themselves. We've had all kinds of issues with cars. So it would not be different in terms of self-driving cars. Every now and then we'll need to have somebody who reports that, hey, listen, Toyota, last week I was driving, or this car was driving me to this location and I noticed ABC and I was not really feeling safe. And somebody else might say, yeah, I experienced the same issue as well. Somebody else, yes, I experienced the same issue as well. And to be incumbent upon the manufacturer to investigate such things and say, okay, well, for now, we are saying that please park your cars. They're not safe to use until ABC has been done. Or please go to your nearest dealer for her to have this and this software issue sorted out, that kind of thing. But those are not new things. They are things that are happening even now with mechanical cars that are driven by people.
Yeah. I'm thinking about trains and buses, you know, all the common or public transports and the efficiency that would come with just a train being scheduled, moving. Hey, that would be so nice.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about the disruption, the disruption in the economy. For example, Ubers. I just click and suddenly there's an Uber that comes and there's nobody there. Hey! I don't have to keep talking the whole way.
No, I think the reality is life has always changed. There was a time when we had mechanics who would, you know, set carburetors for us because your vehicle is using too much fuel.
Yeah.
And then fuel injection came in, and even though fuel injection came in and you do not need those guys who are specialized in carburetors, but you still need somebody who adjusts these things, all these other systems.
Yeah.
All these new systems, you still need somebody who can every now and then make adjustments, tune here, tune there, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We will always, I mean, we'll have to move with the times, but if we're not going to move with the times, then it means that we have actually not been following very closely what has been happening around us.
100%.
TVs have changed from what they were to these slim TVs. Everything's just changing. It's just a matter of keeping up with the times.
Now, as autonomous vehicles become more connected and reliant on software, they also become more vulnerable to cybersecurity threats. So what are some potential risks and what preventative measures should be taken?
We have always had those issues, I think, from time immemorial, where, you know, people thought, well, if I could rob a bank, I mean, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
If I had a guy who was smart enough, he could log into the bank system and transfer $40 million or £40 million to my account, and no one would know who did this and all these things. Banks have always had to have, you know, those kinds of systems in place. And I mean, it's not only upon the bank to say, we are guarding your money with our life. Even the card that they give you when you go to the ATM, they will always tell you there's new scams for doing this and this. Please be on the lookout. There's new ways of cleaning out your account. Somebody will say, we're calling from the bank. Please confirm this and this for us, so we can know that, you know, you are compliant with FICA or whatever it is, whatever pretenses they call under. And banks will every now and then tell us, please do not give your PIN or one-time PIN to anybody who calls, whether they're from the bank or from wherever. These things belong to you and you should not give them to anyone else. So the same thing would happen with car companies, where they would need to constantly, you know, upgrade their software for security and also make us aware of such things that, you know, if somebody should call and say, we are calling from such and such a company, we need your car for 2 hours to do certain maintenance tasks, please don't do that. You'd rather come to us so we can ascertain that there are issues with your vehicle, those kinds of things. We will always have to be on the lookout for such unscrupulous individuals who are always trying to find a loop somewhere to beat the system. Yes.
Emmanuel, imagine being hijacked electronically. You are just cruising. Next thing, where's my car going? I cannot imagine.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. These are real. These are real things.
Yes.
They're real things because, it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere. People drive into filling stations. They say, fill it up. And as soon as you filled it up, the man is out of there at 100 kilometers an hour, endangering lives of others, and not even caring whether the pipe that feeds the fuel into the car has been removed safely or not. He's gone. You know. So we just need to be, you know, each other's keepers. If it happens to one, I mean, criminals are very smart,
but
somebody needs to report some of these things to somebody. And when it's been reported, we will know that, oh, this is the new way of doing crime. And if one has been lost, warn others so that the word spreads and all these kinds of things. At the end of the day, we will never get to a stage where there's absolutely no crime, because somebody will always find a loophole somewhere.
That's true. And considering the vast amounts of data that autonomous vehicles must collect about their passengers and environment, what are the potential privacy implications of this data collection? And how can companies ensure that they are handled responsibly, or our data rather is being handled responsibly?
No, I think such things are being preempted by governments when they, for instance, put into place Poppy Act.
Yes.
Realizing that, you know what, some of these things have the potential to be misused or abused. And also the fact that sometimes very legit companies can fall to the temptation of misusing certain information for their own benefit or for the benefit of their partners or whatever it is. I mean, look at what happens today. You take out a loan with company A, and 3 days' time or in a month's time, somebody's calling you, their marketing, whatever, and you wonder, where did they get my information from? And they know, they even know my name, and they know where I live, they know what kind of, you know, lifestyle I have, and all these things. And all these things have to do with, you know, the exposure that we're giving to Facebook, to the kind of content we watch on online, and all these other things. It might not necessarily even be companies that are giving out this information. It might be people who are just watching what we consume online. And, you know, that needs to have some kind of, you know, oversight by a government or whatever department that can say we need to protect consumers against this kind of abuse or whatever it could be.
And how far are we as Africa from seeing these cars freely roaming the streets?
No, the issue would be the kind of infrastructure that is needed for the rollout of these things, because there are landmarks, certain infrastructure that needs to communicate with these cars. For instance, there was a time when everyone was excited about electric vehicles and how they were going to take over the automotive industry and they were going to kill the petrol car and totally annihilate it. And immediately when that happened, the same companies that were selling those cars realized that, oh, we need infrastructure to charge these cars. And nobody has 3 or 4 hours to charge their car. I mean, if you're driving down to Cape Town and you're on a time frame that I need to be in Cape Town in 20 hours or in 24 hours, and you're planning your trip, in a traditional car, you get to an ultra city on the highway. You might find that it's full there, and you know, maybe there's other cars, other motorists who have stopped there for petrol or for diesel. But within 30 minutes, you'll have been filled up, and you'll have your range extended by 500, 600 kilos, and you can be on your way. Nobody has the time to stick around for 3 hours and try and entertain their kids for those hours while that car is charging, because you know. Time is of the essence. So some of these companies then started saying, okay, you can come and we'll have one of those superchargers, and you can charge from 10% to 80% within 30 minutes, but they're only in certain areas. As soon as you leave metro areas, you're basically stuck. You need to plan your trip very carefully around this kind of infrastructure. So rolling out these things, companies are not willing to roll out or invest in such infrastructure until they know that they will get their money back from, you know, sales of cars. And nobody wants to buy a car without knowing that if buy this car, I'll be able to move throughout the country without any limitations. So you have the standoff between consumers and suppliers.
Because the supplier wants to at least have an MVP, but consumers are not going to pre-order something whose likelihood of functioning will not work. I hear you. Sure, ngapha there's load shedding. And you never know, is the robot working today? Is it too many things? We've got a lot to fix as Africa. But finally, how can the industry balance the need for rapid innovation with the need for robust security testing and protection?
Well, there's no simple answer to that one. And I have said previously that we don't know what we don't know until we put into action whatever it is that we're trying to do. when cars initially started, nobody knew that, you know, there'd be so many cars that you'd actually need a way of controlling traffic.
Yes.
People who just drive anywhere, create their own, you know, road anywhere. And there were horse-drawn carriages and people sharing the same road until you got to a stage where somebody said, no, guys, we need a tarred road with road markings.
Yeah.
And these road markings need to mean something so that, you know, people don't bump into each other. And then you need to test people for competency that they can obey these road rules. And all these other things. And then somebody came up with a bright idea. How about we have an automated system of controlling traffic,
yes,
and robots
yes,
were born,
yes,
and or traffic lights were born. And all these things would never have happened or would never have been preempted until the car was actually in motion with people driving and there was more than one driver. And then we realized that, oh, if we have two drivers, then we have an issue. When they get to an intersection, who should go first? Those kinds of things. And then somebody said, okay, we need a committee that needs to sit down and, you know, come up with rules how we should engage on the road. So some of these things are not things that we can easily just say, okay, I think if we are going this direction, then these will be the challenges. The challenges present themselves after we have put in motion whatever it is that we're trying to do. Then we start opening our eyes as to what needs to happen in order for us to live.
Yeah, that's fair.
And
that's
have
fair.
Sustainable.
Yes. Yes. You know what? For me, tonight's conversation actually just highlights it, or maybe even reminded me that technology changes more than just our tools. Because I think when we think about technology, we think about the actual infrastructure that needs to change. But it actually reshapes our lives, our laws, which you emphasized quite a bit, and even our sense of control. You know, autonomous self-driving cars may promise safer roads and smarter cities, but they also demand that we answer difficult questions. Difficult questions about trust.
That's very true.
Yeah, about
that's
privacy, accountability. Whose fault is it? Is it the software developer, the owner, the manufacturer? We don't know where to place the accountability. So there's a lot that really goes into thinking about innovation and tech and the kind of things that are adopted. And I guess for me, it begs the question, how do they get so easily adopted in countries like the United States and stuff? But maybe that's a conversation for another day. But I do think that the question we can no longer afford to ask is whether we can build driverless cars, but whether we're ready for the world that comes with those cars. And if we're not, then work needs to go into that. And if we are, let's not hold back.
Well, some of these things, in all fairness, they look like they are groundbreakers and they are, you know, no-brainers to adopt them. But as soon as they are put into practice, we start to realize that actually we have so many shortcomings, we have so many implications, and some of them will be taken back, and we are told that, no, this technology is too early for this technology to be introduced.
Yeah,
we need to sharpen the pencil here and there, tweak this and that, and then think about the implications of this and the precedents that we're setting. And then once all those questions have been answered satisfactorily, because we can't really say we have answered everything to the best of our knowledge, because knowledge is dynamic. I mean, what you knew now, what you knew 2 hours ago, is not what you know now.
Yeah,
you don't know what you'll know in 3 hours' time.
100%.
So you're making a decision based on what you know now. And yes.
100%. Oh, thank you for enlightening us. Thank you for sharing your time and your wisdom with us. This was very eye-opening.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely evening.
You too.
And that, my friends, is the deal, or the lowdown on autonomous vehicles, aka self-driving cars. I am Nompumelelo Mbonane, and I hope that you have just made sense of your tech business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
You You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.